Welcome, Eagles, to another episode of Trad Cat Night Radio. I'm Eric Ajewski, founder and owner of Trad Cat Night, the most viewed and followed traditional Catholic website worldwide, ranked number one in the world as it relates to traditional Catholicism by Alexa, now top 20,000 website in the world. Folks, I can't thank you enough for all the wonderful prayers and support you have given me over the past 3 years. We're looking forward to an even stronger 2017. And I just want to remind everyone to subscribe to Tradcat Night right now. Click that notification button because YouTube is getting very finicky, if you will, in this whole information war, if you will, kind of labeling us as fake news. There's a lot of people being unsubscribed. There's, you know, view counts are going down. It's getting really bizarre. I just had my Gavin McInnes talk removed the other day. I had to re-upload that. So it's going to be interesting in the times ahead. Make sure you continue to share these videos and blogs. And lastly, please help in this information war by financially contributing to this apostolate. If you can, donate via PayPal, cash check, or money order. Contributions can be sent to apostleofmary@hotmail.com. And folks, I've got another good one for you today. Without a doubt, I have William Ramsey with me. Now, I just finished a talk with Jay Dyer just this past week, talking on, I would say, relatively similar subjects. But today we're really going to be breaking down Aleister Crowley. You know, who was this man? What was his doctrine? Was he truly misperceived, as some people might suggest, and actually try to defend this horrific freak, in my opinion? But nevertheless, we've got a lot to talk about. So William Ramsey is an attorney, author, researcher from Palo Alto, California, graduate of the University of California, Berkeley, with a degree in history. Mr. Ramsey also has a Juris Doctorate and is a member of the State Bar of California. He has written Prophet of Evil, Abomination and Children of the Beast. He has also made two documentaries, Occult Hollywood and Prophet of Evil, and a lot of his talks can be seen on YouTube. You can simply search William Ramsey. I will provide some of the links right for you in front of you in the description box, including his book, so you can't possibly miss this information. You also can find him on Facebook, by the way, and Twitter as well. I'll probably put those links up there to help William out there too, in terms of getting some more people flooded to his information. So William, listen, appreciate you coming on today. And again, with a lot of these subjects, I have a more rudimentary understanding of how they kind of tie into this endgame puzzle. I certainly don't claim to be an expert on Crowley, so I've got a bunch of questions for William as we're kind of moving along through this talk. Why don't you tell us a little bit more about yourself, Mr. Ramsey, you know, where you're coming from, you know, the website itself, which, by the way, is occultinvestigations.wordpress.com. That's occultinvestigations.wordpress.com. You know, how did you get involved in kind of exposing the occult, and especially from the media side of things? And these are things that intrigue me, because when I go try to see movies, Mr. Ramsey, I'm always looking for predictive programming. I'm looking for, you know, hidden in plain sight types of messages. I just saw Doctor Strange, which was completely a setup for Maitreya and these ascended masters and astral projections and just all kinds of stuff that we're going to be seeing here in the next few years. So why don't you just give us, you know, lay a foundation for us as to who you are.
Great. Well, Eric, thank you for having me on your show. I didn't really know much about the occult when I was first researching Crowley. I was actually kind of there's a lot of reverb. Are you hearing that?
No, I'm not. Is it? It's still bad on your end?
It's pretty bad. Now it's not.
Okay, good.
I can barely hear myself talk. So, I really didn't know much about the occult. I was a researcher of political events. I researched Waco. I researched the events in Oklahoma City. And I researched 9/11. While I was researching 9/11, I came across just this numeric pattern, which, after a lot of research, led me back to Aleister Crowley. I didn't know anything about Crowley. I had a very topical understanding. I'd known some of his references in modern music and other entertainment. So I really wanted to research who this person was. And I recognized that after a lot of research that Crowley was a very important figure in the 20th century. He is considered among British or people in England as one of the most 100 infamous or famous British residents. And so they really kind of knew more about Crowley. So I compiled as many books or tracked down as much information about Crowley as I could find. I've read all of his biographies. He had his own autobiography, which I read. He called that Confessions. That's about 450 pages, which he wrote when he was about 40 years old. So he had a lot of living to do after that, the publication of that. But it really gave an insight into who this person was. He and many people had a different understanding about Crowley, so I wanted to come to my own conclusion about Crowley. I was raised a Christian. I was born into the Catholic Church. So I have definitely a Christian worldview. And after reading Crowley, I recognized that he did have an influence upon the events of 9/11, and the ideas of Crowley informed the events. And he also recognized that he was influential on so many people in our modern culture. But it's interesting about Crowley because he was born in 1875 in England, but he was born into a Christian family. He was born into a family that followed the Plymouth Brethren was the general name, but their subset was the Exclusive Brethren. So they didn't drink. They studied the Bible often. And he actually rebelled against that as he grew up. And it was founded by John Nelson Darby. And so Crowley himself became more interested in the cult when he went to Cambridge to study. But, you know, he had written, he said so many important things about himself in his autobiography. He said, I was not content to believe in a personal devil and serve him in the ordinary sense of the word. I wanted to get hold of him personally and become his chief of staff. So he had a very intense desire to become like what could be, you know, determined as a Satanist. Although he would never call himself that. He didn't believe Satan was the enemy. So he would never use that term of, you know, Satan being the adversary.
Yeah, it's kind of similar with Maitreya saying now, you know, about Satan and Lucifer and trying to paint him in a positive fashion. My question for you is with Crowley and this connection with the occult and, with numerology, you know, how important is it to Freemasons, to those in the occult, just this idea of numerology? And do we see it popping up often in media and entertainment? And if so, maybe give us some examples.
Absolutely. I mean, I think that the numerological underliers of the events of 9/11 themselves indicate the importance of numerology to occultists. And the idea of numbers, like Crowley's most important number was the number 11. 11 represents so many things to Crowley. Represents the number of the new aeon. It represents the number of magic. It's actually a kind of it's a symbolism of duality, the one and one together.
Right.
And so you see that, but you also see these numerological references in tons of movies. You can see some of the 11s. If you look at my documentary, Occult Hollywood, I trace the use of numbers by people, and it indicates kind of an inside code to fellow magicians or people with a magical worldview about what their knowledge is. So if you see an 1177, 93, to Crowley, 93 was a number of prime importance. It represented in the Kabbalah two words, agape and thelema. His religion was called thelema. That was a reference for will. He believed in the primacy of the human will. Love under law, love under will was what he repeated. But so you see these numbers that they represent or reference important principles in the occult. And they definitely do permeate. I show in a lot of Oliver Stone movies, he's not afraid of showing his occult knowledge by using numerology. And I show that in, other people who are famous directors, that they actually do know. A lot of these people are clearly initiates into the kind of secret society system. They do know it. So it's there. It's definitely there. And in the events of 9/11, and I go to it in my book, in Prophet of Evil, Aleister Crowley, 9/11 and the New World Order, I think my general thesis is that all of those terms go together. Aleister Crowley, 9/11 and the New World Order all were tied together in that event on September 11th, the day of the 11th day of September. So,
yeah, interesting stuff there. Now, you mentioned, he's raised a Christian, but now as we're kind of progressing, maybe you can give us more of a backdrop in terms of his education and training with the Golden Dawn and Freemasonry, maybe some individuals specifically who helped shape his personality, if you will. I know I think more generally in your talks, you talk about McGregor, Mathers, Alan Bennett, to name a few. But it seems to me like there's a whole lot of connection between like Buddhism and Theosophists, the occult. I mean, just there's a lot of connections there that I don't think a lot of people make.
There's no question. Crowley himself came of age at a time in the late 19th century in England, when England was the most powerful force on the earth. You know, the sun never set on the English Empire, the British Empire. So there was all this new knowledge that was coming back there from the East, from China and from India and all these other places. And Blavatsky's Theosophical Society had tremendous growth there. And a lot of the people who were in the Golden Dawn, which was a post-Masonic magical fraternity, what that means is that it was for people who had passed through all of the grades of Masonry and still wanted to advance. So he learned from Theosophy, the Golden Dawn, all these other things. And then, after learning all of that himself, he actually traveled to India and China to pick up ideas about yoga and Buddhism and integrate them back into his own kind of occult system, which is rather unique. A lot of those at that time, that was very kind of groundbreaking. So Crowley had ascended to a part within the occult that a lot of people respected his outlooks. So I think that, you know, going back, he definitely, and he was a reader. He said he used to have a white hot passion for reading. But coming out of Cambridge, you know, he was in the same university that Francis Bacon was in, Isaac Newton, all of Charles Darwin. So he said himself, this is a direct quote from Crowley, "I was part of the glories of the past. I made a firm resolution to be one of the glories of the future." So he had a very strong desire to become a well-known person. And he was always reading and integrating all these ideas. One of his other, and in his autobiography, he references Sir Richard Burton. Sir Richard Burton was a adventurer who was one of the first kind of Westerners to actually go on a Hajj in Mecca and Medina and write about it and travel the earth. And write, you know, he was a physical and spiritual adventurer, and I think Crowley saw himself in that same light.
Now, if you were to give us kind of a more general synopsis, breakdown, if you will, of Crowley doctrine, we'll call it. I mean, what did he really stand for? I mean, we could get into the specifics later. Maybe we could talk sex magic, the child sacrifice and all that. But I think you brought up some points here that I wasn't aware of, that he kind of really stood behind the whole rights to man, you know, kind of concept, which, you know, we as traditional Catholics, we've been trying to warn people that this is Freemasonry, that, you know, the Catholic Church had always promoted, you know, rights to God and the church and not rights to man, kind of reshifting society and granting, you know, all kinds of rights that really aren't there now, you know, hence transgenderism and, you know, all the sodomite agenda. Everyone's trying to look for their equal share now in society when the church has always taught, you know, error doesn't have any public rights. So, I mean, it's pretty key, I would think, to kind of point this out. But maybe just give us a synopsis of Crowley doctrine.
Well, that, you make a good point about the rights of man. We'll get to that. But basically, he codified his ideas into one phrase. "Do what thou wilt shall be the whole of the law." An 11-word, 11-syllable phrase. So he believed in almost total human freedom, no restrictions. He considered that a rebellion against the strictures of his upbringing. And all of his writings, I think, were based upon that, things that elevated what he believed to elevate human beings through magic, through knowledge, through practice, through ritual. And he wrote something called – he codified all his works into write books that he called Liber 11, Liber 77, all these different things that had numerological meaning. And one of his more important references was what he called the Rights of Man, Liber 77 or Liber Oz. And in the Rights of Man, it delineated the total freedom of humanity. And it said that there is no God but man. So it was a direct renunciation of the idea of the Godhood. That's how he started Liber 77, and he ended saying, "If anybody dare take these rights away, you can kill them." So that's not a verbatim statement, but he basically said that the rights for yourself must be defended by potentially murder. And Liber 66, all of these, the more important books that he codified, are based upon the multiplication of the number 11. And Liber 66 is where he talks about child sacrifice. So that's, 11 less than 77. So 66 is his number of child sacrifice that he references into his writings and his magical records, which he kept Illuminous Magical Records that some of them fell into the hands of Jimmy Page, and they are very arcane, based upon the Kabbalah. But Crowley himself saw himself as one of the seven most important people who ever lived. He believed that he was on par with Buddha, Muhammad, Confucius, Christ, and Aristotle. So he really saw himself as a prophet. I titled the book Prophet of Evil because he saw himself as a prophet of the new aeon. It's kind of like a new age, but beyond the new age, the aeon was a cosmological change. So he believed that he was going to bring a cosmological change to the world. And he actually said to some people that he knew, 100 years, and this is like in the early 20th century, he said 100 years from now, people will be basking in the light of Crowleyanity. So his goal was really a very thorough evangelization of his ideas. And that's why when the Theosophists of the early 30s, I think it was the 1920s or 30s, brought in Jiddu Krishnamurti as the world teacher, Crowley immediately contested that creation of Krishnamurti and said he was the world teacher. He sent out all these papers showing himself as being the person to actually take the helm of the world teacher. It really didn't stick.
Yeah. That was one of the things I noticed. I didn't realize there was so much infighting.
Yeah, so they were always fighting. Actually, Crowley actually told a friend he got exhausted by all the fighting, infighting among black magicians. Like, they were all sniping at each other and fighting amongst each other. And it actually, that actually is going on today. I came across some of the OTO members undercutting each other just within the last week. So OTO was Crowley's. Crowley became the head of a German secret society called the Ordo Templi Orientis.
Right.
That he became its head in 1925. He actually spent 3 years in and out of Germany right during the Weimar era, right before Hitler came to power as chancellor, which is very interesting that once Hitler came to power, Crowley never was in Germany again. But so he was the head of the OTO, and also he had his own order he called the Astrum Argentum, which is the Silver Star, which was an international order that anybody could read from and learn about Crowley's teaching. So he definitely was he was recognized globally as an occult kind of superstar.
Yeah, well, at least he was humble, right?
Yeah, I mean, the interesting thing about Crowley is he never said anything. Yeah, he was always saying that he was the top. He was always fighting and contesting for the primacy of the head. And that was one of the reasons why he got kicked out of the Golden Dawn, is that he wanted to go into the Second Order as fast as he could, and other people in the Golden Dawn rejected that. He was responsible for the destruction of the Golden Dawn Magical Order.
Now, a quick off question here, William. You know, I kind of take a little heat for saying this. You know, we kind of look at the origins of our country. This is kind of a little off topic. And we see that the underlying principles of Freemasonry there, whether it's religious liberty, and I'm building up to a point here. We just recently had another situation where it was the past 48 hours. We had a satanic temple, you know, leaking out photos and videos of their satanic black mass. And it seems like they're trying to just normalize that activity. Now, under the concept and principle of religious liberty, I mean, these Satanists have a public right to that. I just argue in a Catholic country that ain't happening. You ain't going to see these people have public rights. And so that's one of the things we're fighting for. I think there's just kind of like this misconception that we're kind of overlooking here in this country of a lot of the Freemasonic principles, whether it's, you know, religious liberty or separation of church and state. You know, you turn the dollar bill over and you see Novus Ordo Seclorum. And, you know, I'm one for advocating, you know, loving the fatherland. You know, we got to love our country. We obviously are run by evil leaders now. But, you know, do you think people are often kind of overlooking that? And then maybe we can draw a connection to what kind of influence Crowley has had on Western society here in America.
Well, I definitely think they overlook that. I think that the public school system is in part Masonic, and I believe that it's initiatory. So when people are growing up in fifth grade to ninth grade or whatever, the initiates understand the Masonic influence upon history, but the non-family Mason members have no idea. So they don't hear about Ben Franklin being a Mason, sitting behind Thomas Jefferson, influencing, the Declaration of Independence and all these things like that. They don't see that. They don't see that a lot of these heads of our country have been Masons. They don't see the influence of the ideas. They don't understand why Albert Pike's statues in Washington, D.C. And so I think that it's an undercurrent, but it's very influential. I mean, D.C. is laid out on Masonic occult principles. So it's a crucial part of our political story that isn't known. One of the interesting things they just found out is they trace back the heads of the British Empire in Britain, and everyone was a Mason for the last 200 years. So that's like the Masons were run. Actually, you had to become a Mason to run England, so or the British Empire. Yeah. So I think it's very important to understand for people who are Christians who don't come from a Masonic family. I mean, some of these Christians are like. What is it? Who's the guy who's a Mason? Is it Billy Graham was a Mason? So
there's a whole bunch. I just had on Dave Dionisio, didn't mean to cut you off there, who has a great book out now. And I encourage everyone to listen to it if you haven't heard it yet, William, that Trump is connected to this Brotherhood of Death. I mean, he's got a lot of key people around him who are 33rd degree Masons, a lot of eerie details concerning his background. I just got his book. He sent it to me, Dave Dionisio. On the New World Order. I encourage everyone to listen to that talk. It's very eye-opening. I'm just saying that because just my fear is, you know, with Trump being elected, that everyone thinks everything's going to be hunky-dory now, and I just think he's being staged to, how should we put this? I think civil unrest is right around the corner, revolution. Who knows, maybe even tomorrow with what we're seeing in the news, William, maybe all hell starts to break loose tomorrow. I didn't mean to cut you off there.
That's okay. But you don't know. I mean, you really don't know. I like the people that he has around him are experienced military generals. So it's, it's troubling that they're not really civilians in many other administrations. So what was the title of the book?
Oh, goodness. Something New World Order. If you go to my YouTube page, for everyone who's listening now and for William, if you go to my YouTube channel, Tradcat Knight, it's the first or second video right there. You'll see Trump, Brotherhood of Death, and in the description box is the book. And he just sent me a free copy. But, I mean, it's a complete breakdown of the Brotherhood of Death. And he's a very notable traditional Catholic author. You know, he was high up somewhere in the military, but then also he was a CEO of MetLife. I mean, he was just like – he has a very – influential background, so he's very credible, and he's written a lot of books on some traditional Catholic prophecies such as Our Lady of Akita, which is now under wraps by the Vatican. He actually met the sister over in Japan and talked to her a little bit about some of the prophetic events. But yeah, that's one area that we did, and it's the video is really growing. And I didn't mean to get off topic there. We could get back to who was Aleister Crowley. Now let's maybe get into maybe the magic side of thing, you know, discussing rituals, received writings. You know, this is a key area for me too, contact with entities, because as many of you know, I've been kind of pitching, I truly do believe that this Antichrist figure is Maitreya, and he's saying that these, you know, space brothers and spaceships are setting up for his arrival. And here we have Crowley talking with Lamb. I mean, right. Are we talking, you know, demons here? Are we talking fallen angels? I don't buy the whole alien narrative, I guess.
I don't buy the alien narrative. I believe that his conversation with Lamb, the Lamb conversation is really one of the more fascinating aspects of Crowley, because he drew the entity that he had contact with, and it's in a direct and exact replication of a gray, what would be called a gray alien. And he drew it in like 1919.
Yeah.
So it's just an incredible thing. And Crowley was constantly trying to contact and receive information from entities his entire life. And that was the purpose of his rituals, was to kind of break through and have conversations with extraterrestrial entities. I wouldn't even call them extra. It would be other dimensional would probably be a better term. So, and this all started from the very beginning when he first got into the Golden Dawn. He tried to do these magical rituals of Abramelin that he said at his manor in Boleskine in far north Scotland, that there were entities in his house, and that building is supposedly haunted till this day, to all the way almost to the end of his life. He's always contacting and writing down information. But the primary event in his life happened in 1904 when he was in Cairo in Egypt, and supposedly he received a book called the Book of the Law, which references the book that's in the Masonic system as the central book. When you do rituals, you do it on the Book of the Law. So he had a three-part book that he received from an entity he called AWAS. And AWAS, he reveals later that AWAS was Satan. He actually admits it in later, but it was like a coded term, Lord of the Air. So, and we know in the Bible, Satan is referenced as the Lord of the Power of the Air. So it was very kind of a clever blind. He used blinds that were very common going through old Western occultism, where words had two meanings, and one was an occult meaning, which is still common to this day. But so the receipt of the Book of Law became the central part of his religion, and he always had the Book of the Law in his rituals as a central part, and he referenced the Book of the Law. And it was a fairly nasty book, and the last part was supposedly dictated to him or referencing the god of Horus, the Egyptian god of war. It talks about plucking out the eyeballs of Muhammad and really nasty. There should be blood, and talks about drinking blood, which is interesting in association with our present blood rituals involving Abramovich and Podesta and all the stuff like that. The spirit cooking, yeah. So you'll probably find out at some point that she knows of Crowley or is a pretty hardcore occultist.
So why are so many? I was on a couple of your videos, and I'm always, you know, I go down and I try to scroll and look at the comments, and you had a lot of trolls there suggesting, you know, Crowley wasn't a Satanist. I mean, trying to defend, like, you know, what is this guy talking about? Trying to paint you out to be, you know, some kind of nut job. I mean, why are there so many people trying to defend him in that sense when it was openly known that he was a Satanist? I mean, even he admitted it, you said.
Right. Well, he admits that. You know, he says, here's the exact quote. He called himself the Beast 666.
Yeah.
He says, here it is. The Beast 666 has preferred to let names stand as they are and proclaim simply that AWAS, the solar phallic hermetic Lucifer, is his own guardian angel and the devil, Satan, of our particular unit of the starry universe. This serpent, Satan, is not the enemy of man, but he who made gods of our race, knowing good and evil. He bade know thyself and taught initiation. So he lays it out very simply there. That's directly from one of his books. I mean, he says it, but like I said, he uses coded terms. He talks about the Holy Guardian Angel ritual, and that is a euphemism for contacting Satan. So I think the defenders and the trolls largely, I mean, I've actually researched some of these people. They are members of the OTO. They're sympathetic to modern occultists, and they want to keep the lie alive that Crowley was not a Satanist because it benefits them and deceives the public from
that makes sense. Yeah.
Their initiation knowledge. I suspect in some of those initiatory things, they have no choice but to lie publicly. They cannot divulge the rituals they've done, the oaths they've made. So that's part of their practice, is to lie and deceive. And that's one of the reasons why I wrote the book, is to expose and shed light on this clearly deranged person of Aleister Crowley.
Now, as we're talking about Crowley, the occult, you know, something's just kind of passing through my mind. I know you did some research on this. You're paying attention to movies and media as well. Again, I don't have the knowledge that you have in this area, but more loosely speaking, I'm able to follow along. What's with all the fear-mongering that we kind of see now? Not that it probably wasn't present a couple decades ago, but it seems like it's getting worse. You know, horror movies coming out, you know, these just weird movies. I saw another commercial the other day, the Bye Bye Man or something. It was just, like, really retarded, but it's trying to creep people out. I mean, is there something to this where they're trying to create, you know, more dark energy, you know, feeding off of fear-mongering? Did Crowley ever talk about this, or just in general, the occult? I mean, what are they trying to – what's the end game here, more demons in the world?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think that the Crowley tradition of trying to contact demons is still alive among occultists, and I think that there might be a normalization to create this kind of new age of horrors, the age of war and bloodshed and death. So if you normalize people to it, they become used to it, and could probably, some people watch those movies, they get inspired by them. Not the majority, but, you know, I do think that there are some occult serial killers out there, people influenced by the occult who are around in the present day. So,
yeah, I agree with you. There's some documentary on now. I think it was on Discovery Channel where it's going through serial killers. It's quite astounding to see how, you know, each serial killer is trying to outdo one another, and their use of media, just as you mentioned, I think there's no question that they, they do follow the media and books.
Well, I'm studying like the strange death of these young men who leave bars and disappear and then are found in water. It used to be referred to as the smiley face killers because in some of the places where the body was put in the water, they found the insignia of a smiley face. I talk about the meaning of the smiley face on my YouTube channel, William Ramsey Investigates, but it is a kind of chaos magic symbol that talks about how life, the universe is one big joke and you can do what you want because there's no effect. Yeah. So, but it's still happening to this day. People are still disappearing. They've had disappearances in Ohio, Maine, Virginia, and in the UK. So, young men need to be very careful being out there. You can get GHB just like a woman can. So it's a dangerous time to really be young and alive. It's being out late at night is very risky, in my opinion, if you're a younger man. So I've been researching that, and I found a lot of strange events that happen on occult days and over the Christmas, over the Christmas season and stuff like that. So,
What's the number one occult day on the calendar? I know sometimes I kind of is it right around All Saints Day? I'm trying to think.
Well, I think there are eight major occult days, and I have them in my book Abomination. But the I can probably find them right here. But every religion kind of has its own. Any occultists have their own day. But the big ones are the equinoxes and the solstices. Those are the things that happen four times a year as the Earth is farthest away from the Earth or depending upon which hemisphere you're on. So those are definitely big-time occult days. But for Crowley admirers, for example, their holidays are his birthday. So October 12th is a big occult day. It's called the Crowley Moss. It's like a feast of Crowley Moss where you have a feast for Crowley. But the ones I have are Imbolc, Beltane, Lammas, and Samhain, which is Halloween. So, and then the winter solstice and the summer solstice, spring equinox, autumn equinox. So those are important days to watch out for people disappearing or strange things happening. A lot of people die strange ways on Halloween. That actually is not uncommon.
Yeah, I've heard a lot of satanic rituals too on that day. So, yeah, I'm here with William Ramsey. Wow, we got a really great talk going on here. Get to his website, occultinvestigations.wordpress.com. We are continuing along here. Now, who can we say did Crowley influence? I know you made mention of some individuals such as Kenneth Grant, Kenneth Anger, even L. Ron Hubbard, which is a name that I think – was he connected with Scientology, if I'm not –
Yeah, he was the creator of Dianetics and Scientology, but he was an early he actually lived at the place where Crowley's favored disciple lived, a guy by the name of Jack Whiteside Parsons. L. Ron Hubbard was his business partner and shared a girlfriend with him. And some people who have researched L. Ron Hubbard, a guy who wrote a book by the title of A Piece of Blue Sky, said that he was surprised to find out that the person who influenced L. Ron Hubbard the most was Aleister Crowley.
Wow. And then we have some other names, Ozzy Osbourne, Jim Morrison, Jimmy Page. But then one that stands out to me, and I didn't know this, was John Lennon. Yeah. Wow. Yeah. I mean, maybe talk a little bit more about that.
Yeah, well, the Beatles, they kind of changed right around 1968 with their album Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band. And when they sing in their intro song, it was 20 years ago today, Sgt. Pepper taught the band to play. Aleister Crowley died in 1947. Sgt. Pepper is like a code word, pepper black, right, with like perfume. That could be Alice. Some people have speculated that it's Aleister Crowley. And Crowley is on the cover of Sgt. Pepper. So there's a pretty good belief that they were influenced by the ideas and magic of Aleister Crowley, particularly both John Lennon and Paul McCartney. Paul McCartney said the Beatles were all about magic with a K.
Yeah.
And that's kind of the way that Crowley spelled it, magic. K is the 11th letter of the alphabet, so it has kind of a magical meaning as well.
Yeah, I would argue, too, with John Lennon. I mean, listen, I'm very adamant. We believe that the Catholic Church has been hijacked by Judeo-Freemasonry. I personally believe it's even quite possible that every Vatican II Pope has been a Freemason. Certainly, when we take a look at Francis and what he's teaching, all the hand signs he's giving. That AOK sign is that 666 hand sign. And I just draw everyone to Maitreya in the end. Take a look at Maitreya's statue and see what hand sign he's giving. He's giving that 666 hand sign. And here I'm looking at a picture right now of Paul McCartney, John Lennon, giving the same hand sign, giving other occult hand signs that most people kind of just identify as, you know, as rock stars, you know, like Rock On and all that. I mean, they don't have no idea of the occult connections behind these people, right?
They do it all the time. And it's interesting. Crowley himself said, and these guys all have tons of titles. Crowley himself says, I'm supposed to know more secret signs, tokens, password, grand words, grips, and so on than I could actually learn in a dozen lives. So he had all the hand signs back then. And some of the Manson followers of the family use hand signs. So it's all around, you know, it's just everywhere. And I think a lot of those people have been exposed to occult ideas. But going back to the Beatles, in one of the last interviews that John Lennon made, he said, the whole Beatle idea was to do what you want, right? Take your own responsibility, do what you want, and try not to harm other people. That's right out of Crowleyism and Wiccan ideas, which are based upon Crowleyism. A lot of people don't know that. But Wicca actually sprung out of the OTO and Aleister Crowley.
Now, what about this connection with I've seen on other alternative news sites. I wanted to get your take, your research on this. Is there a connection between Crowley and Barbara Bush? I mean,
everybody asks the same question. My general answer is I cannot confirm unquestionably that she is an offspring of the Crowley line. What I can say about Crowley is he did not have a problem having children. He was not it wasn't difficult for him to have. He had children with multiple wives or scarlet women during his life. And even at the end of his life, a woman came to him when he was in his late 60s and said, I want you to have my baby. He said, okay. So he had a child by the name of Ataturk. And so he, at the time, it's known that the mother of Barbara Bush, her name was Pauline Robinson, and she was a wealthy kind of offspring of Eastern elites. And it was known back then for a lot of the American upper class to go to Paris. You know, it was this kind of swinging 20s, and Paris was this, all it was, even Crowley was attracted to Paris because all these writers and artists were there. So she went to Paris, and it was known that she was friends with a friend of Crowley's, a guy by the name of Frank Harris. And they all lived together, Pauline Robinson. And what Crowley was doing at the time was one of his experimental rituals. It was called, basically you would have to have servitors because it was something where it was a sex magical ritual that required sex and a lot, you know, basically a lot of that kind of sexual energy. And so the surmise that Pauline Robinson came back pregnant and she had Barbara Bush, very young. And if you look at pictures of the family, Barbara Bush is an outlier. She's a genetic outlier from the rest of that family. She looks exactly like Crowley did as a woman, you know, as a young girl. She looked like a young Crowley, basically. Crowley had a big head. He actually tried to disguise it by wearing, different hats or scarves or something like that to try to minimize that look of it, of a big head. But if you look at Barbara Bush, man, she looks a lot like Crowley. She has the same eyes, the same structural face. It's very, very weird. And if you look at her statements and what she has said and done, she sounds just like Crowley. She has this like really elitist outlook. When the tropical, the hurricane hit Louisiana and all those people got stuck in the there was a football stadium or something. She's like, oh, it'll work out fine for them, everything, you know, and the place that had no bathrooms or anything. So she had, do you remember that statement?
Yeah.
And then one of the interesting things is Ozzy Osbourne, who knows about Crowley, was at a meeting with George W. Bush, and George W. Bush's son says, oh, hey, Ozzy, mom loves your stuff, which is really weird for, you know, a 70-year-old woman to be having interest in Ozzy Osbourne. So I can't confirm without a doubt. You know, I mean, the walks like a duck, talks like a duck, acts like a duck. But, you know, and you see these weird correlations when George George W. Bush, the son, Jr., was president. 9/11 happens on an occult date that represents all the numerology in a building that has tons of structural numerological meanings. Basically, the World Trade Center is a big 11. It's an ideogram is the word that Crowley used. It's two symbols that represent duality, which is an important concept in the occult, and two opposites coming together. So the design of the World Trade Centers was a Masonic occult, really it's an incredible, because it was 110 stories too, you know, so it's 11. I mean, the whole thing was broken up into three sections. So that's a visual 33. They had the cryptid, the cryptid ball that was in the front, which was actually used in Fight Club. So the whole thing is really remarkable. So the long and short is Bush Sr. Is in Skull and Bones. So this is a family with a lot of occult ties, in my opinion.
Yeah, and most people, you know, I think they hide behind Christianity, whether it's Bush or some of these other family. Who knows what Obama? I don't think Obama knows what he's, what he identifies with anymore. At some point, I thought I saw him, identify himself as a Christian, and then, you know, some people suggesting he's a Muslim. I mean, who knows? Bottom line is, I believe that these puppets are selected, not elected. You know, another area here that I wasn't aware of with Crowley, to be honest with you, is this connection with yoga. And yeah, maybe you could break this down a little bit, because we've been kind of tooting the horn on this again. You know, things, we're moving out of a Christian culture and society into this new age, if you will. And I have no doubt that yoga is a part of it. And it's being normalized, not only in the quote-unquote Catholic Church, but I would assume in other Christian denominations too as well. Maybe you could talk a little bit more about that connection, if you will. Crowley and yoga. I was surprised to see he did a publication on it.
Yeah, I mean, he actually has lessons in yoga. He had a friend by the name of Alan Bennett, one of his early roommates, and he went to Sri Lanka, which is Ceylon, when he was 27 to study yoga and learn about it. So Crowley understood all the different states of mind, the ideas behind yoga. Granted, the Western version of yoga leaves out a lot of the old Indian versions, where yoga is actually a practice used to contact the gods. And so I don't think that what people are doing, at least in some places, I live in LA, yoga is everywhere, but, you know, they're mostly just trying to look fit. But I do think that certain parts of yoga are pretty authentically connected to the old Hindu practice. But Crowley wrote about yoga, integrated yoga. There's pictures of him in my book, Practicing Yoga. And that was just one part of the kind of secret knowledge that he always was trying to collect and integrate into his system. And that was one, yoga was definitely one part of it.
Now, another name that pops up that I'm sure most of my listening audience has heard about is Aldous Huxley. What was it, 1936 or so, Crowley visits Germany and meets up with him. Maybe you could discuss, that meeting, if you will, and kind of the significance of Huxley and his famous work, Brave New World. I'm only assuming that had to have some sort of Crowley influence.
Well, I think that's interesting. There is a Crowley painted a portrait of Aldous Huxley. And so in a private collection somewhere, which I haven't been able to find, there is a portrait of Aldous Huxley by Crowley. And the rumor is that Crowley turned Huxley on to his first drug trip. They called it back then anhalonium, and Crowley was using it in New York, when he was living in New York during World War I. He was using it with a lot of his other elite friends, but it was basically psilocybin. So, and Aldous Huxley wrote a book called Do What You Will, so he kind of knew the ideas of Crowley, how much he knew, but he knew friends who also, and I show that in my YouTube channel, there are people like that knew Aldous, who knew Crowley. So there, and it's interesting how Crowley grew up in the upper class of England, and they all kind of knew each other. Crowley knew Somerset Maugham, the author of Razor's Edge. Actually, Somerset Maugham wrote a book about Crowley. And Ian Fleming, who was good friends with Somerset Maugham his whole life, who used some of his inspiration, knew and had talked to Crowley during World War II regarding the flight of Rudolf Hess to England. And Crowley, there's actually correspondence between Crowley and Fleming that exists. So they were considering asking Crowley about the occult ideas of Rudolf Hess, who was talking in strange words when he landed in northern England. And my understanding is he flew over with some outfit that had all kinds of pictures of moons and suns and like some kind of magical garb, which is very bizarre. So The connection between Crowley and Huxley is confirmed, and how much of the drug use or this kind of ideal society from Crowley to Aldous Huxley, I don't know. But what I do know is Crowley believed the slave shall serve. He was a member of the British upper class, and the slave shall serve. He believed in a rule of the kind of elite over a group of slaves. And if you look at the kind of ideas that Aldous Huxley wrote into Brave New World, it's clearly a kind of very rigid authoritarian system with a bunch of drugs. And I think Crowley would have approved.
Now, I'm just sitting thinking right now. You know, I keep seeing this country popping up with Britain. Were there any other Crowleyites, if you will, significant that are in Britain? And maybe you could give us a little bit of a backdrop on Britain a little bit in terms of Freemasonry, the occult, the New Age. The reason why I bring this up is because this is where supposedly Maitreya is, in London. It just seems to me Britain seems to be coming up an awful lot.
Well, Crowley himself, and I write this in my book, Children of the Beast, Crowley thought he was the reincarnation of Eliphas Levi. And Eliphas Levi wrote a bunch of books that actually influenced Albert Pike. And some people believe Albert Pike ripped off Eliphas Levi, like was a straight plagiarizer. And so Masonry has these ideas of Eliphas Levi, and so does Crowley, the idea of the Sphinx. That's why in Masonry at the House of the Temple, you'll see the Sphinxes out in front, because they represent the four doctrines of the magician: to know, to do, to know, to will, to dare, and remain silent. So it's kind of interesting concepts that pervade Masonry and Crowley. So Levi was from England. He was a defrocked Catholic priest. And, you know, when you go back to England, I mean, at that point, it was really kind of the capital. London was the capital of this empire that attracted a bunch of occultists. And as far as other, why it came out of that, out of the Western tradition, you know, you have to go back to John Dee and Edward Kelly. And Crowley actually did some of the same rituals that John Dee and Kelly did. He went to Algeria to do them, but they supposedly summoned a demon there. And Kelly and Dee, you know, Dee was one of the smartest men of the time. And Crowley was kind of like a type of Dee, a person who was contacting spirits and keeping notes about it. The contact of Dee and Kelly with spirits. And Dee, it's also important to remember, Dee was the original 007, believe it or not. And that's why people think Fleming adopted the numbers 007 for James Bond. But Dee was the court kind of wise man for Queen Elizabeth. So he was there in the Elizabethan time. So there is a current of occultism and knowledgeable wise men that goes through London. You know, it goes through England, no question.
Now, my question for you, in all your studies with the occult, Freemasonry, New Age, just breaking it all down, is there kind of a number for this, or a date given, let's say, for the arrival of, you know, the what we would call the Antichrist figure, you know, whatever we want to call it, the Golden Age, you know, the Age of Aquarius, New Era. You know, we've got this Agenda 2030 thing that's out there writing about, and obviously I think most Christians would come to the understanding that eventually Antichrist would be, you know, on top of the UN, kind of running this type of thing. Originally, I think it was 2050 was the date. Now it's moved up to 2030. It kind of seems like maybe they've moved their timeline up a little bit. I don't know. That's just my suggestion. In any of his predictions, or just in general on the occult, was there a year given? Because I heard from some who were on the inside, they always suggested this 2050 date, but I think apparently that's been changed now, maybe.
Well, dates are important. I think the day of 9/11, 2001 was a high date. Even Arthur Clarke knew about that, who was a Crowley, you know, who knew about it. And I write about him in Children of the Beast. But as far as Crowley was concerned, I never came across a date in my readings of him. What I did come across is he did a ritual where he supposedly contacted, I think it was either the Antichrist or something. He thought himself, as he was an Antichrist too, Crowley just thought himself. But he said, I know one day my Lord will rule the earth, you know. So he had some kind of magical event where he saw, you know, Satan or the Antichrist being a world ruler. So I think that was kind of interesting.
Now, one of your other books that we really didn't get into yet, I'd like to talk about that, and you can give us your synopsis and breakdown on, is Abomination, Devil Worship and Deception in the West Memphis 3 murders. Maybe you could tell us what's going on in this particular book that you have written. By the way, you can get this in a Kindle format. I'll leave the link for you so you can buy it. But maybe talk a little bit more about this specific instance and relaying it just overall to the occult.
Well, the fascinating aspect of Abomination was that there's a tie to Crowley, and that's really what piqued my interest in this very notorious case that took place in West Memphis, right across the Mississippi River from Memphis, Tennessee. There were three young boys who were ritualistically murdered and found on May 5th of 1993. And while I was actually researching my book, Children of the Beast, I came across this video that had this guy, Damian Eccles, talking about Crowley on the stand. I was like, well, what was this case about? Well, it's about ritualistic murder. Crowley himself wrote that the ideal sacrifice is a young child of perfect intelligence, a young boy of perfect intelligence. And just so happens that the lead person in this case has said that he said recently he was prosecuted for his love of Crowley, which nobody really knew back then. How did you come across all these Aleister Crowley books? What's another fascinating aspect of this case is all of these celebrities who adopted this case and tried and helped get these guys released in August of 2011. It was Dave Navarro, Johnny Depp.
Wow.
Yeah. The lead singer of Pearl Jam, Margaret Cho. All these people came out and raised money. They raised between $10 and $20 million. They got the best attorneys, best PR, and got these guys out of jail. But and they actually pled guilty again in 2011. They were found guilty in 1994. What made the case also fascinating is that HBO ran. They did a trilogy of documentaries about the case that created a bunch of public uproar. But what those documentaries did is they omitted tons of information, and they never really grasped the fact that Damian Eccles was heavily involved in Crowley. He actually stated publicly after he was released that I wanted to be the greatest magician of all time. And what's fascinating, we talked about early Crowley and the Holy Guardian Angel ritual. Well, in his own biography, when his own story about being in jail, it's called Life After Death, Damian Eccles says that he did the Holy Guardian Angel ritual. He writes about it, which is, for me, it was just an incredible statement because it's tying him right back into the Crowleyan tradition of contacting Satan. So there are a lot. It's a remarkable. What's also remarkable about the case is how the mass media failed and refuses to actually look at the case honestly. And they've adopted this PR position that these guys were prosecuted in a southern state because it was a witch hunt and the attorneys were hillbillies and Klan members, which is all nonsense, Klan members and silly. But all the evidence points to them. They all admitted to doing it at one point or the other. And there were all kinds of other testimony from other people that the police had police statements of about the occultism that was taking place there. These guys were sacrificing dogs. People were getting... there were all kinds of weird sexual assaults. Damian Eccles was in three different mental institutions. So it's an incredible case that nobody in the public, there's kind of a little underground that talks about it, but no major public media will ever, and these guys are still, believe it or not, they're still under probation for 10 years until 2021. So, yeah, and they've never actually basically vindicated themselves in any legal forum. That nobody's ever gone back and said, I want to be exonerated. I don't want to be a convict for first-degree murder. It's remarkable. Nobody ever thinks it. So and it's confirmed OTO by his own admission that Damian Eccles is a member of Aleister Crowley's OTO. He actually had an OTO, member come and talk to him while he was in jail. He donated his entire book collection to an OTO chapter in Arkansas. So it's just an incredible case that, you know, nobody wants to talk about. It's about the murder of three kids. And then Children of the Beast is about all the people that Crowley influenced, people who are public figures, the head, Harry Hay, the real first gay rights activist, what used to play the piano at OTO meetings in Los Angeles, probably where Jack Parsons went, all these early guys. Alfred Kinsey loved Crowley's books. He wanted to find them. Another sexual revolutionary whose ideas were right in basically the same as Crowley's.
Now, was Crowley ever considered a pedophile?
There was a thing I wrote about that when he was in North Africa after he got kicked out of Italy. He was kicked out of Italy and France, but he was with a Catamite, C-A-T-A-M-I-T-E, which is a Arab boy lover. So that's the only evidence that I've come across. I'd like to go back through and read all this stuff again and see why. But I think that he advocated, and there are supposedly some blinded rituals, which I haven't found yet, that he's written about ritualized pedophilia.
Yeah, I mean, you would think with their philosophy, anything goes, that would, I mean, he wouldn't have an issue with it. You know, unfortunately.
One of the other interesting people that Crowley influenced was Timothy Leary, who said that he thought he was the, almost like the reincarnation of his idea. He owed the 60s to Crowley's ideology. Wow. You know, he openly stated that. So you have this 60s upbringing with guys who are pedophiles, who are Crowley lovers, who are into the same kind of ideals as Crowley, drugs, free sex, that kind of stuff.
Well, that's one of the things we like to do here at Tradcat Night. Of course, we're not trying to fearmonger here. We're trying to expose the darkness, expose the New World Order, you know, establish these connections between Freemasonry, the New Age, and all these different occult. You know, it's wonderful to get people like William on, who obviously studies this particular area and is well advanced in his knowledge and can come on and break all this down for us. Unfortunately, we're just about out of time here. What's on the horizon for Mr. Ramsey? What are we working on? Any new research coming up? Any specific area that you're going to target maybe in 2017?
Yeah, I'm coming out with a documentary about these serial murders of young men in the United States and the UK, so look forward to seeing that. All of my books, if you want signed copies, are available at occultinvestigations.com. That's my website. And I'd like to kind of still flush out a little bit more about Crowley's influence upon music and how many musicians idealize Aleister Crowley. And I think that would be an important reference work for a lot of people.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, appreciate you taking the time out, William. And as you're investigating more, we can hopefully get you back on in the upcoming months, and you can relay all of your research here at Tradcat Night. Wow. What, you know, I'm sitting here taking notes as I hope that all of you have been. And again, it's when you start breaking this down, you start seeing all these connections, you see how these musicians are tied in, and we just live in a, you know, sick world, really is what it is. But we've got to stay focused in on Christ. We've got to stay focused in on light and truth. And in the end, we know who wins. It's certainly not the devil and Lucifer. So I appreciate everyone tuning in. Make sure you subscribe to Tradcat Night, click the notification button, and please help us in this endeavor, this apostolate. Please donate. And I appreciate you all. You're all in my prayers. Hopefully you keep me in your prayers. And until next time, my good friends, stay safe and God bless.